Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Galp Energia's fourth quarter of 2014 results conference call and strategy execution update. I will now pass the floor to Mr. Pedro Díaz, Head of Strategy and Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Galp Energia's fourth quarter 2014 results conference call. Joining me this morning is our CEO, Manuel Ferreira de Oliveira, our CFO, Felipe Silva, and Otelo Ruivo, our Investor Relations Officer. Manuel will start with our strategy execution update, and Felipe will cover our fourth quarter results. As usual, we'll be available for Q&A at the end. Please bear in mind that we may be making several forward-looking statements, including about our plans and expectations. Actual results and outcomes may differ materially due to factors which are presented on the disclaimer shown at the beginning of our presentations. I also would like to remind you that we will be holding the Capital Markets Day in London in 1 month's time on March 10th, so I hope to see you all there. I will now hand over to Manuel. Thank you.
Thank you, Pedro. Good morning to each and all of you. Thank you very much for taking some of your time to be with us this morning. Our industry, as all of you know, is going through challenging times, and uncertainty has returned to the market after a relatively long period of stability. It is also worth referring how different the refining margins were in Europe during 2014, with margins in the first half of the year close to their minimum, suffering from refining overcapacity and from the high prices of crude. On the other hand, in the second half of the year, margins returned to what I would call normality, benefiting from the sharp decline in oil prices. As you already know, in a year marked by such volatility in the oil and gas markets, Galp Energia is able to deliver a good set of results. I take this opportunity to reaffirm how strategically important is the integration of our upstream and downstream businesses, particularly in a period when we need cash from operations to support our investment program required to put into production our valuable discovered reserves and contingent resources. Let me now briefly provide you with an update on our upstream business and on the execution of our main projects referred to in slides 7 to 11. Our production has been supported by the execution of the Lula-Iracema project in Brazil, which is in a clear growth path, and also by the relatively steady contribution from Block 14 in Angola. In Brazil, we have two units in Lula running at full capacity, Cidade Angra dos Reis and Cidade Paraty, and the third unit is ramping up in Iracema. This unit, Cidade Mangaratiba, started production last October and is now producing over 65,000 barrels of oil a day with two producer wells and one injector connected. We are seeing excellent flow rates that support our positive view on the Iracema developing going forward. We are confident that this unit will reach full capacity ahead of the scheduled date. Now let me refer to the status of the more immediate upcoming units. FPSO number 4, Cidade Itaguaí, is already in the Braçfeld shipyard in Brazil for topside integration works after having its hull converted in China in the COSCO shipyard. The unit is expected to start production in Iracema North in the fourth quarter of the year, and works are proceeding according to plan. 8 wells were already drilled, and two are currently being drilled, additionally to be connected to the FPSO at its arrival. As for Cidade Maricá, FPSO number 5, and Cidade Taquarembá, FPSO number 6, located respectively to Lula Alto and Lula Central areas, conversion works are ongoing in the Shaanxi shipyard in China, and we expect these units to start production throughout 2016 as planned. As for the additional replicant units, works are ongoing both in Brazil and Chinese shipyards. In this regard, I must highlight the progress on the hull P-66, the first of the replicants to be delivered, which arrived in December at the Vassal shipyard in Brazil. I want to reassure you that we are closely monitoring how works for these units are progressing, in particular in what refers to local suppliers' performance, and when necessary, do whatever we can to promote mitigating actions. As an example of this, we had a performance issue in one of our local suppliers, IESA, who was responsible for the supply of the gas compression and injection modules to be integrated into the 6 replicant units. The BMS 11 consortium decided to terminate the contract in order not to further compromise project timings and to fast forward a mitigating solution. An international tender was launched and for the construction of these modules, and proposals are expected very soon to recover the lost time. These are the kind of actions that we will take in order to minimize the impact of such circumstances in our projects. These are complex situations which we are closely monitoring, and as a consequence, we will prudently assume a more conservative estimate to the delivery timing for some of the replicants in the future. With regards to Yara, we have submitted the declaration of commerciality to ANP in December, which included 8 fields based on 3 accumulations. All 3 accumulations extend into the surroundings of Yara, the transfer of rights area assigned to Petrobras, and will therefore have to be unitized. We are preparing discussions with our partners and ANP regarding the unitization process, while also preparing the development plan for the unitized Greater Yara area. The production individualization agreements that will result from the unitization process, once finalized, shall then be submitted together with the development plan for the unitized Yara ANP. In the meantime, we will proceed with additional reservoir rate acquisition works in Yara, which are required due to the heterogeneity and size of this area, which most likely will be developed in stages. Now let me move on to block BMS 8, slide number 10. During the fourth quarter, the consortium concluded the first drilling stage of Carcarai extension. The drilling works have already started in Carcara extension 2, which is like the first well, an appraisal well, with a rig using MPD, managed pressure drilling equipment, suitable for this kind of reservoir. This rig will later be used to complete the second stage of the first Carcara extension well. We expect to perform a formation test in the Carcara extension 2 in the second half of this year. Here in the Santos Basin, a quick note on the DST concluded in Bracuí during last quarter, which confirmed the oil flow potential of this area of the reservoir. We expect to provide a complete update on the appraisal works in BMS 24 on our capital markets day in the forthcoming March. Let us now move to Mozambique, namely to the Area 4 Rovuma project referred to in slide 11. After the approval of the enabling law, the government of Mozambique has approved a specific decree law that will support the development of the Rovuma project in complement to the already approved revision of the petroleum law. From the legal point of view, we consider ourselves comfortable with the legislation that has been put in place by the government of Mozambique. Meanwhile, the consortium has already submitted to the Mozambique, to the authorities of Mozambique, the declaration of commerciality and the plan of development for the Coral FLNG project, which are subject to the partner's final investment decision at a later stage. Engineering works are ongoing both for the Coral and the Mamba projects, and we expect to have proposal for the FLNG EPC-IC contract by mid-year, and for the EPC for the first development stage of Mamba, particularly for the onshore facilities, by the second half of the year. So far, the project in Mozambique is going according to plan. Now let me go over to our downstream and gas activities. Market conditions in the fourth quarter continued to support the refining margins, essentially due to the lower oil prices, with our benchmark margin averaging $2.9 per barrel. As you can see in the chart on the left-hand side of slide 13, we took advantage of these market conditions. The utilization rate during the period was around 85%. The operational flexibility of our refineries and our logistics infrastructure, particularly the ability to import and export VGO, allowed us to achieve high premium over the benchmark, which combined with the opening of the differential between heavy and crude oils contributed to a refining margin standing at about $5 a barrel in the quarter, which represents a very good premium for the refining and supply activities. The higher refining margins and the positive contribution of our marketing business, which benefited from a material reduction, cost reduction measures that were taken during the year, both of these actions have supported the improved results of our downstream division. In 2015, we will continue to implement further cost reductions in our downstream business, namely in what refers to energy consumption, logistics optimization, and adapting the support structures of these businesses in order to improve the cash flow that they generate and their resilience. As mentioned in the previous quarter, we are still prudent regarding the evolution of the refining margins, because the refining overcapacity in Europe persists and the current margins continue to be mostly supported by the prices of oil. On our gas and power side, it is worth noting the stronger than expected international LNG structured trading activities in the quarter. Even under difficult market conditions and lower unit margins, we have been able to increase the volumes that are associated with this activity. This activity allowed us to compensate the decrease of volumes sold to our direct customers in Iberia and to reach, as you have noticed, an historical high in the sales of natural gas. Before I finish, let me give you a quick word about the recently proposed tax law announced by the Portuguese government last week. This tax envisages to specifically target North Energia's non-regulated long-term natural gas supply contract with the charge that the government announced to be around 150 million euros to be paid in 3 years. The draft legislation does not include the value of critical parameters required to calculate the tax impact, which will only be set by the Minister of Energy after the eventual enactment of the law. So far, we cannot provide any additional information in this respect. What we do know is that there are no economic nor legal grounds for this measure to be passed, to be legislated. Be assured, as our shareholders, if we've invested in our shares, that we will do not be waiting seated for any unreasonable measure or tailor-made law, and that we will do all we can to protect the legitimate interests of the company. I cannot conclude without a reference to the well-known instability and corruption charges that are affecting Petrobras and some of its suppliers. We have been working with Petrobras for more than 15 years. During this long period, we work and share the experience, technology, and knowledge with world-class professionals. Petrobras, as the operator of most of our concessions in Brazil, always delivered its responsibilities, most of the time ahead of schedule and with extremely competitive terms. The exploration, appraisal, development, and ongoing production operations have been uniquely successful, with a relevant reference to Block BMS 11. We are thankful to all those at Petrobras that enthusiastically, with hard work, high competence, have been making the success of the pre-salt project. We sincerely hope that the new leadership of Petrobras succeeds in clarifying the corruption issues and its main consequences, then takes the required measures and moves forward to building the successful future that Petrobras deserves. We are thankful to all those at Petrobras that have contributed and will continue to contribute to what Petrobras must be. With that, I now pass the floor to Philippe, who will present to you the quarterly results. Thank you.
Thank you, Manuel, and good morning to you all. Starting with the P&L on slide 14, group EBITDA was 399 million euros in the quarter. This was supported by an improvement in European refining margins and a stronger dollar. The contribution from higher LNG sales in the international markets mitigated the fall in natural gas sales to our direct clients, as did the higher E&P production. E&P EBITDA was down 7% to 102 million euros, as the production increase did not manage to offset the large fall in average realized price. Working interest production reached 36,000 barrels per day in the quarter, mainly driven by the contribution of FPSO number 2, that is Paraty, which operated at full capacity, and by the start of FPSO number 3, Mangaratiba. Net entitlements reached 33,000 barrels per day, with Brazil up 80% year-on-year and already accounting for about three-quarters of group net entitlement production. During the quarter, production costs were up 5 million euros year-on-year, impacted by higher production costs in Brazil and the start of operations of FPSO number 3, and by the EWT performed in Yara. On a per-barrel basis, costs decreased by around 27% due to the dilution effect. Refining and marketing EBITDA was 191 million, benefiting from the increase in European refining margins, a stronger dollar, and a positive contribution from our marketing activities. Operational cost cutting played a relevant role here, namely in energy efficiency, marketing, and personnel. Finally, for gas and power EBITDA, it was up 5% year-on-year to 101 million euros in the quarter, with higher volumes of LNG traded despite lower margins in the international markets. our regulated infrastructure EBITDA was down in the quarter, mainly due to the downwards revision of the estimated return on RAB for the 2014-15 period, which is based, as you know, on the yields of the Portuguese treasury bonds. Overall, for the full year, we had a well-balanced contribution to EBITDA from our three divisions at over 400 million each. Group EBIT in the fourth quarter reached 258 million euros, reflecting the improved operating performance of the refining business. Below the EBIT line, we would only highlight the increased amount of taxes, and this is mostly related to a better operating performance in the oil business in Portugal, a higher upstream taxes from higher production in Brazil, and an increased provision for deferred taxes due in the future in Angola. Please note that our IFRS numbers, which do not isolate inventory effects and one-off adjustments, show a full year loss of 173 million. Pages 28 and 29 of our results report published this morning provide a detailed reconciliation of such adjustments. But in a nutshell, during 2014, we had 455 million euros of negative inventory effects at the EBIT level, about 100 million in asset impairments, and about 100 million split between provisions for the levy the Portuguese government is imposing on the energy sector, a deferred tax assets which we had to reverse in Spain, and restructuring charges. On slide 15, we have CapEx, which amounted to 366 million euros in the quarter, up 55% from last year, of which around 87% was allocated to E&P. The investments were mainly allocated to development activities in BMS 11, in particular to the drilling of development wells and the construction of the FPSOs and subsea systems in Lula, Iracema, as well as the construction of the Cabiunas gas export subsea pipeline. Exploration and appraisal capex was 63 million euros in the quarter, mostly allocated to appraisal activities in Brazil, namely in the pre-salt and in Amazonas. For the full year, most of our exploration and appraisal capex was channeled to the pre-salt, Mozambique, and Morocco. Now for downstream and gas capex, for the full year it reached 137 million euros, a significant part of which going to the planned maintenance of the Sines refinery. Our Capital Markets Day is only a few weeks away, so we are not providing guidance to the markets for the upcoming years, except that we will be revising downwards our previous CapEx guidance of 1.5 to 1.7 billion euros. More color on this on March 10. Our cash flow from operations on slide 16 was 331 million in the quarter, benefiting from a large reduction in working capital as expected. This came about from the decline in commodity prices, but also from lower inventory levels. This is very visible on our balance sheet on slide 17, with working capital down 360 million euros in the quarter. You will also notice on the balance sheet that whilst Sinopec reimbursed about 100 million euros of its loan to Galp, the outstanding balance has actually increased, but this is from the higher dollar exchange rates to the euro. Net debt increased 82 million in the quarter, as this was a high CapEx period. Considering the outstanding loan to Sinopec as cash equivalents, net debt was 1.6 billion euros, or about  1.2 times debt to EBITDA. We reaffirm our commitment to keep this ratio below 2 times. On slide 18, you see that at the end of the fourth quarter, the average life of our debt was 3.7 years, with two-thirds of our gross debt only due from 2018 onwards. This is a reimbursement schedule which is better aligned with the expected free cash flow turning point. Our liquidity remains high at 3.2 billion euros, which, together with our integrated business profile and financial discipline, positions us well to face a period of low oil prices and significant CapEx in the upstream business. With this, I conclude our presentation for the day, and we're happy to take your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star one on your telephone keypad. Please note only two questions per person are allowed. Again, please press star one to ask a question. We will pause for a moment to allow everyone to signal. We will now take our first question from Oswald Clint of Bernstein. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you very much. First question, yeah, I guess kind of obvious one, but given the $50-$60 oil price environment, could you maybe talk about that net debt number and where you think it might end up towards the end of the year if we stay at these prices? Obviously, most investors, I don't think we're expecting Galp to be really reducing their investment CapEx at this point in the cycle. So some color on that would be good. And secondly, just quickly, at least on FPSO number three, I kind of note from your release you're still talking about kind of 18-month ramp-up period to plateau into the middle of 2016. I remember last year there was some discussion around some of these FPSOs potentially ramping up faster than that, with 11 or 12 months. So could you really just talk about that kind of 12-month ramp-up rate? Is that something that might still be possible with some of these newer FPSOs? Thank you.
Thank you, Oswald. This is Felipe. I'll take the first questions. The integrated business model is actually working. So our net debt evolution is a combination of, yes, E&P production and realized sales prices, but also the impact that a lower oil price environment has on our refining business. From a net debt, hence free cash flow perspective, the E&P business is heavily, heavily taxed. So from a, again, free cash flow net debt, as long as refining margins are sustained, we don't see any impact in our free cash flow generation. Thank you.
Oswald, you can see the value of integration with the present level of production and refining capacity. Remember that we simply are producing about between 30,000 and 40,000 barrels a day, while we are acquiring and refining 250,000-300,000 barrels a day. So it is this imbalance of volumes that allows the compensation between the margins on the downstream versus the upstream. Going to your question on FPSO number three, yes, you are right. We expect to, and I said that in my introduction, that we expect FPSO number 3 to ship full capacity ahead of what we have committed to deliver. But we are maintaining the delivery time as agreed. We expect to have them the latest bid next year, hopefully even before.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Haytham Rashid of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for the presentation. Two questions from my side, please. Firstly, just perhaps a few comments on the LNG and the unregulated gas business, just in terms of your outlook for 2015. You highlighted that in 4Q we saw strong volumes, but margins coming under some pressure. How do you think about that evolving into 2015, and particularly with regards to the sort of €400 million EBITDA level you've talked about for the gas and power business? I mean, how confident do you feel in that, in achieving that going forward? Second question is just a bit more on, and I appreciate you talked about leaving some of the update on CapEx for the 10th of March Capital Markets Day, but just perhaps if you could talk a little bit about your discussions with partners in the context of flexibility to phase spending, particularly Brazil, Mozambique, and Angola. How have those discussions gone, and how much flexibility do you feel you have around that? Would be very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you for your two questions. Starting with the gas business, we have referred to in other occasions that our trading is anchored in what we call the structured trading. So we've got operations that we will execute throughout this year that have been, in a way, negotiated in previous years through a structured set of agreements. So we believe that with these operations that we have, if everything goes as we expect, plus some opportunistic actions that we will take throughout the year, that we'll be maintaining the level of results that we expect in gas and power. And that is, I tell you, the hard work of our supply and trading team. And from talking with them, I'm confident that they will deliver that. As far as CapEx, you see, as it is obvious, we see what is going around us. And we are part of that because our operators, Petrobras, BG, Chevron, BP, Total, and DNI, these are the companies that operate our assets, have said what they want to do. So through them, we are saying what will happen as well. But to be very specific on it, item by item, we will reserve that for the capital markets. The discussions that we are having in the different consortiums are based upon the present context. Fundamentally, expecting low cost for the same level of activity through higher competition in the supply chain and some CapEx being delayed, if particularly in the more challenging projects. In Brazil, BMS 11 in particular, which is the transformational project for our company, we don't see in 2016 any material delay.
Thank you. Very helpful.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Brendan Warne of BMO Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. It's Brendan Warne from BMO Capital Markets. Just two questions, if I may, and I apologize if they are forward-looking and they may be reserved for the Capital Markets Day. But just firstly on BMS 24 and just your thinking around Bricuri and Jupiter in the current oil price environment. And then just second question, if I may, just in terms of you've made an indication of impacts to CapEx in light of the current oil price, but could you make a comment in terms of direction of potential either reserve, contingent resource, or impairments, future impairments, in light of the current oil price, please? can I confirm my question was received, please?
Hello? Yes, finally. Hello? Pardon, thank you. Hello?
Hello.
Thank you. I apologize. So I can assure you that I was not asking help for your question. So it was genuinely something that didn't work around us. So so back to your question, BMS 24, we will be addressing that reservoir in technical aspects of that reservoir in our capital markets day. You know, is a major reservoir with challenges, and what we had a good DST. We know the fluids. We know the fluids much better. So what we have to do by 2016, late 2016, is declare commerciality of it. So at this stage, we see no reasons why it should not be developed. On the other hand, all the indications we have is for its development. With the price, and the present crude oil prices is not an inhibitor of that development. Going to your impairments, we in no project where we are, where that is producing, that is in, so the reserves, when we have a project, we have reserves associated, all these reserves can be economically monetized with the present price of oil and remunerate the capital employed. So that's the statement I can make about block BMS, block about the units that we have in Brazil and block 14 in Angola. As far as our CAPEX, as Felipe has referred to, we will most likely, we will talk about it in March, but I don't need to be to be restricted in telling you that the outcome of our business plan indicates a lower level of CAPEX in the next couple of years.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And I apologize for the inconvenience caused.
We will now take our next question from Mehdi Ennebati of Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Hi, so good morning, gentlemen. Good afternoon, gentlemen, sorry. I will ask you two questions. The first one regarding the downstream business. So you've published a strong utilization rate in Q4 compared to the recent past. Should we consider that you will be able to reiterate this performance if the benchmark, your benchmark refining margins remain approximately at the same level in 2015 than it was in Q4, or on the contrary, should we consider this as a one-off and then you should go back to a more normalized level that we've observed in the recent past, meaning around 70-73%. The second question regards with Mozambique CAPEX. In the current let's say LNG price, oil price environment, don't you think that it will be wise to wait a little bit more for the FID in order, you know, to try to negotiate better tariff with the contractors, or do you think that the job has already been done and you keep your plan of the FID to be taken later this year? Thank you.
Mehdi, thank you for your questions. Starting with the downstream and the benchmarking, the premium above benchmark. This premium has three components typically. One is the refinery performance, and a lot to do with the energy efficiency and availability of units. I think we have been doing a very good job on it. The second component is the location of the refinery. And the third component is the spread between heavy and light crude. So this last quarter we benefited from the three. We benefited from a wider spread. We benefited from good availability of the units, and the location is what it is. So and there is something also that we benefited too, is the exchange rate between dollars and euros. Our operating costs, except energy, are euros-based, and the business is dollar-dominated. Thank you. Going to the second question.
Manuel, just to be sure, so the utilization rate of 80% that you had in Q4 should be something that you will be able to reiterate in 2015, given the 3 points that you provide us?
Thank you. Thank you. You see, our availability of our refining infrastructure is much higher than 85%. We can be close to 95 to 100%. That's how we target. The point is we run is a function of an economic model. We have a linear programming model, and the units are programmed not to have a high utilization rate, but to generate the optimum margin. So the utilization rate is a dependent variable, not an objective in itself.
All right.
Going to the CAPEX in Mozambique, you see, we are waiting for the proposals that will come to us. As far as FLNG, we have contracted three consortiums to do the FEED and present a proposal for EPC. So with the numbers that would come, we will decide what follows. No? For the onshore project, for the Mamba project, what we have is the FEED has been already done. Now we've got four consortiums that were selected to bid to present a lump sum turnkey proposal for the project. We believe that from the CAPEX point of view, this is a good moment to receive those proposals. In the meantime, our marketing teams are working to see what and how can we monetize the value. So the equation will be made and the decision will be taken when we've got the facts and the numbers on our head.
Thank you very much.
We are not obsessed by time. We are obsessed by value. Thank you.
Thanks.
We will now take our next question from Bruno Silva of BPI. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. I still have two questions. The first one, going back to guidance, usually provided the short-term outlook of first quarter. In this case, for EBITDA and production, can you please provide some highlights? And would it be possible to specify, as far as possible, what are the expected year-on-year euro amount of savings achieved in the downstream unit so that we can extrapolate for full year 15? And secondly, going back again to CAPEX guidance, I dare to ask, what would be the level, looking at the previous plan, what would be the level of flexible or discretionary CAPEX under GALP's control? And I guess that looking at the downstream CAPEX in full year 14, it looked like it was way below the guided maintenance level that you had given before. So I don't know if it was postponed or if you are already enacting a contingent plan. So any information on those grounds would be very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bruno, for your always good questions. No? You are referring to guidance on first Q. We will basically, at the close of this presentation, Philippe will summarize some guidance that he can put together. But as far as the production, remember that last quarter, the equivalent quarter, we had an EWT, an extended well test, which produces about 30,000 barrels a day, so 3,000 barrels a day for us, was ongoing. It will not be now there. On the other hand, our exit production last year, without that, it was about 40,000 barrels a day, you know? Which is a good indication of what would happen this quarter. No? We will have a second well connected somewhere throughout in Mangaratiba, somewhere throughout Q1, and then we will see what comes out of it. No, we are positive from the volume point of view in terms of volumes. In terms of CapEx, you see, we are part of consortiums. No? So what we do, so we can, we have to go through each debate. We influence as much as we can in the consortiums. At the end of the road, we are a single. The projects are a single one. And what you are hearing from the operators is obviously included in our thinking, and we have contributed to it. No? As far as costs, you are aware, because of the market conditions in Portugal and Spain, that we have drastically reduced costs in our marketing business that contributed materially to the results that we are presenting. We have rationalized the organization structure. Unfortunately, we have made redundancies of professionals, and I think we are prepared to the way forward. The maintenance in our refinery last year was a major refining turnaround in Sines that of that magnitude will not happen this year. So we will make a rigorous control of CapEx and continue with a very rigorous ambition on cost control in all our operations, being them downstream or corporate. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Philip Rosa of Bessie. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning everyone. So two questions as well. The first one on these contracts that you had with IESA and you needed to outsource it and you are launching a new bid. Just for us to use this as an example, could we expect that this new contract has better, worse conditions in terms of investment than the previous one? And do you think that this will be the major driver for potential delays in your first replicant unit? So that's my first question. And my second question relates, sorry to come back to marketing, to the outlook for the marketing division, but taking consideration the cost savings you announced, taking consideration, I don't know if you could go through the main moving parts for the marketing division for 2015 in terms of volumes, direct sales, what do you expect? What could we expect from unit margins, taking consideration the cost savings? So just for us to have a sense whether you expect a better EBITDA for 2015 than in 2014 for this unit. Thank you very much.
Philip, thank you for your question. Thank you once again. So referring to IESA contract, that was what I referred to what we did, and is an indication of what we might do if other similar situations arise. The major decision, and it was not an easy decision to take by the consortium, and particularly by Petrobras, was going from to an international bidding process. So there are different bidders preparing, so it would be, I would not want to anticipate whether we would get a better or worse proposals. They will come in due time. The context, if you see what's going on in the industry, indicates that we might have a better proposal, but that is simply an assumption, not a statement. No?
Mm-hmm.
As far as the replicants, yes, we see in the present context that what's going on in Brazil, the difficulties that certain suppliers are facing in Brazil, as well as in the industry as a whole, that we might face some delays in the replicants that are being built. As far as P66, the first one, P65, it is 66. It is on schedule. We cannot say at this moment, it would be unfair to say that it would be materially delayed. We are working for it to be delivered as we expect next year, in 2016. But the world is moving below our feet, no? So that's mm-hmm. what could happen.
But just related, mm-hmm. sorry.
As far as the cost saving the downstream business, I think we will continue to do that. We will continue to do that. It is material. On the same for the same exogenous value, that means from the same excess rate, from the same refinery margins, we expect a better EBITDA as a consequence of the materialization of the cost reduction that we took throughout the year in the marketing division.
Should we expect better volumes, taking consideration that the price of oil products has dropped significantly and there could be some small elasticity to lower prices? Are you seeing any signs of that in your direct sales?
You see, it is what you said is reasonable, but we have to wait for the end of the quarter. So I do not want to be optimistic. You see, our attitude in the company at this moment is conservative. We want to be prepared for a worst-case scenario, ensuring that we do what is needed to be done, but having conservative views about the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Hamish Clegg of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my question. Just to get back to the balance sheet a little bit, one of the things you mentioned was obviously the covenants, or not the covenants, rather, the targets you've talked about so much before of 2x debt to EBITDA. Do you mind just alluding a little bit on what oil price assumption you use to make those? And we all know the long-term cash flow outlook is very good, but to that point, can we get some confidence from you, or what makes you so confident in your shorter term debt profile and maintaining that liquidity with the cash flow, with the capex coming up? And you also alluded to telling us more about BMS 24 on the capital market day. Am I right in thinking that if there was anything big to come out of that, we would have seen that pre-announced already?
Anish, thank you for your questions. I will ask Philip, which is more pessimistic than I am about the future, to answer to your questions. So, Philip, take the question, please.
Thanks.
I will be just as optimistic as to the first question from Oswald and how our free cash flow is built up at GALP. We, under our internal modeling, even at much lower prices than we're observing today, if you assume that the refining unit captures some, not all, some of the decline in energy costs from a lower Brent, then the free cash flow generation in 2015 and 16, which are the two critical years for our 2x debt to EBITDA ceiling, we have given that our production in E&P is still relatively small. You know, Manuel alluded to an exit production at the end of 2014 of about 40,000 barrels per day in E&P. The refineries are processing 275,000 barrels per day. So the free cash flow uptick, free net of tax uptick, in refining and margins, in refining and marketing, is higher than the loss of free cash flow in the E&P division. Now, CapEx is a factor, but you know, we have pre-announced today that it will be below the guidance we have provided last year. So, under internal scenarios, and again, in a nutshell, internal modeling, below current Brent prices, we will comply with 2x debt to EBITDA. I also want to reaffirm, 2x we are including the Sinopec loan, the loan to Sinopec, as if it were a cash equivalent. So make sure that's built into your model as well. Thank you.
Brilliant, thanks. And on BMS 24, I mentioned something on that as well. If there was something big, we would have expected to see it kind of released in the market. So will it just be more of a sort of a bit of a evolutionary update?
Yes, Anish, yes. It is an evolution update, yes. We've invested a lot in studies, conceptual development of the reservoir, and also on appraisal work that has been done. We've got information of the DST. We have planned another one this year. We've got another well to drill this year. and I think we'll got a package of information to take prudent decisions into the future. But no big bang on Jupiter.
Okay, thanks.
We will now take our next question from Matt Lusting of Numera. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just one question left, please, gentlemen. Kakara on BMS-8, I wonder if you could just conceptually update on the sort of the timelines associated to that development. I think you said earlier you'd be sort of drilling through most of this year. You previously talked, I think, about first oil and an FPSO in late 2018. Just wondering what the milestones are from here that you need to hit in order to deliver on that target longer term, or indeed whether that's still feasible. Thank you.
Matt, thank you for your question. Carcará, as you know, is a high-pressure reservoir, and when we start production from that reservoir, we cannot inject gas into the reservoir in the first phase of development of the reservoir, like we are doing now with the Cidade Paraty, Mangaratiba. No? So what we have is, we have in developing the critical factor to start up Carcará will be the export of gas from the field. And we are working hard on it to have reliable estimates of feasible deadlines on it. As far as the reservoir itself, these two wells that are being drilled, Carcará Extension and Carcará Extension 1 or 2, they are critical for it. You remember that the characteristics of, in terms of permeability of the reservoir in Carcará is the one in the area surrounding the Carcará discovery are the best in the pre-salt. No? The question that we are asking, everybody is asking, is are those characteristics, those attributes common to the full reservoir or not, or just it's a hot spot with those characteristics. So far we are assuming that everything but that hot spot and the average reliability and permeability that we've seen elsewhere in the pre-salt. These wells will be critical to define whether we will have another good project in the Santos Basin or a fantastic project in the Santos Basin. So that's the options that will be confronted with the results of this well. And that's it. I think I've answered to your question. Thank you. Thank you, Anish. And see you on the 10th.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Mark Bloomfield of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my question. It's a question on the sustainability of your supply and trading earnings in gas and power. I think you've previously indicated you've contracted about 1.4 BCM of LNG supply diversions under fixed margins through until 2015. I'd just really like to understand what proportion of that 1.4 BCM you've been able to extend agreements on, and if so, to when, whether on those agreements you've been able to lock in the margin, and if so, whether the margin that you've locked in is basically in line with the original contracts. Thanks.
Mark, thank you for Yes, Mark, we are struggling without the little apparatus that I've got in front of me. But to your question, yes, the 1.4 BCM, and actually slightly above that, has been contracted with a fair high of reliability on the margins associated with those sales. This resulted from a structured auction program that we launched a couple of years ago. So we feel that we can ensure those levels throughout in the period between 2015 and 2018. It's quite an anchor for the gas results. However, we want to do slightly better than it. So the 1.5 BCMs is not what we just expect to do.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Michael Alsford of Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my questions. Just a couple for me as well. Just on IARA, could you just confirm, obviously, the initial development plan of the three FPSO units? Do you think that fully recovers the reserves booked currently by Galp for that asset, or do you need further FPSO units to recover your reserve base? And then secondly, just a quick clarification point really on what you said before, just firstly on marketing. Did you actually say that, or marketing refining, did you say that you were actually targeting new cost savings within that business going forward? And if so, could you give us some quantification of the amount? And then just on the impairments that you mentioned, there was some relating to Brazil, and I just wanted to get an understanding of what they actually related to. Thank you.
So going to IARA, straight answer to a straight question. Yes, three units for the great IARA development will be not enough to develop the reserves that are in place. And we will address that issue in our capital market series. We are working with our partners to make sure that we share with investors consent the same views about the future of the great IARA, which is really the real reservoir that has to be developed. As far as the marketing issue, effectively the cost savings, the benefits from the material benefits from the redundancies that we've made, the negotiations that we've done with our suppliers and with our partners that operate our infrastructure and retail sites, all of those will come up this year. So we expect a visible cost reduction in the marketing activities. In the capital markets day, we'll be talking about all the developments that are taking place in our company, from Big Wad to Amazonas to all the areas where we are operating and how are we reacting to the present context that we live. Always, as Philippe consistently states, ensuring that we go through 2015 and 16 with the restriction, the self-imposed restrictions on debt to EBITDA. That's, I think, the sacred objective that we want to respect. No? But we do not see any major. The present circumstances are not forcing us to take. I would say a portfolio management, major decisions on our portfolio, and that's what we will try to explain to all of you on the 10th of March. Thank you.
Thanks. And just as a follow-up, thanks. I look forward to the capital markets day. But just on the impairment question, as to what that actually related to in terms of the Brazil assets. Thank you.
No, you see, in impairments, our process is we have a lot of activities in exploration. No? We capitalize our exploration activities up to a moment when we have to give the license back to the government. That's what we have been doing. No? In that moment, we present it as a cost in our P&L. No? So that's fundamentally it. Like we did last year with Morocco. We had high expectations on Morocco. Morocco was a dry well. We maintained the licenses because there are issues that are other people working around that could give us information to reinterpret the data that we have. But the reality is that last year we took to our P&L as a non-recurrent cost the expenses in Morocco, like we did with Big Wah, we did some for Amazonas and from BMS 21. So we are in a way making those impairments, as you call it, as the circumstances arise. Philippe is telling me that we also wrote off last for Block 33 in Angola when we concluded that Block 33 was not commercial.
Understood. Thanks, Manuel.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
We will now take our next question from Lydia Rainforth of Barclays. Please go ahead.
Thanks, and good afternoon, gentlemen. Two hopefully relatively straightforward questions, if I could. On the balance sheet and the loan to Sinopec, why did that go up year on year? At this stage, given the CapEx commitments, I would have expected that number to be coming down. Is that simply an FX impact there? And then secondly, still on the balance sheet, for Petrogal, when you think back to the capital raise that you did 3 years ago, is the balance sheet of the subsidiary, of the Petrogal subsidiary, where you would have expected it to be at this stage of the development, or is it stronger? And I ask, from what I can see, the production numbers have probably been slightly better than you would have thought, and the CapEx numbers slightly lower. So I'm just thinking, going into what is probably a lower price environment than you might have thought, that the balance sheet of Petrogal is probably stronger than you would have expected at this stage. Thank you.
Lydia, I say hello. Lydia?
Hi there, yeah.
Hi. I will pass the word to Philippe, but I don't resist to tell you that the fact that Sinopec is paying us in dollars and increased its debt in euros is quite exciting for us. It's effectively a FX issue, but Philippe will take care of the question.
Yes, Lydia, we report in euros, and this loan is a dollar-denominated loan, as are the proceeds from the capital increase in Petrogal Brazil a couple of years ago. So the capital increase was all subscribed in cash. Sinopec gets 30% of Petrogal Brazil, but most of the capital increase actually was done through a Dutch-based vehicle, which is also 30% held by Sinopec, and it is that cash that we use to fund the cash calls in Brazil. So if you see over time, our gross debt is fairly stable, group-wise, fairly stable. It is our cash balances that are going down by approximately the amount of the negative free cash flow. So we are consuming cash in Brazil. Iberia, gas and power, refining and marketing are free cash flow positive after we've completed the upgrades of the refineries. And this is what you should expect going forward. So EBITDA minus CapEx in the mature businesses, positive, and negative where it matters, so where the cash is, which is effectively Brazil. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Henri Patricot of UBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello everyone. Just one quick follow-up on the Sinopec loan. I was wondering what do you expect to be the pace of repayments in 2015 in dollars? Thank you.
The loan matures in March 16, so we have about a year to go when this money is due as per the contract. What we have agreed is a certain prepayment or reimbursement profile, but we monitor this monthly with Sinopec on a need to have the money basis. So there's no point in asking for this cash back if we don't really need it. But it is really a function of negative free cash flow in the Brazil operation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
We will now take our next question from Thomas Adolf of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Couple of questions, please. One on Mozambique. Wondered if you can confirm whether you have any HOA signed for either the FLNG or the onshore part. Anadarko seems to be a little bit more open about these things. Second question on Brazil, just going back to the EFSA contract, correct me if I'm wrong here, it was signed 2 years ago, they went bankrupt, you cancelled the contract, you said proposals expected soon. What sort of timeline do you assume for the delivery of the compressors, please? And also if you can comment on whether you are concerned if Keppel, or at least an agent that works for Keppel, obviously controls the Brussels shipyard where much of your finishing touches are done, may also be implicated in Operation Car Wash. I mean, what sort of mitigation measures can you apply there? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Thomas, for your questions. Let me talk with Mozambique. You are referring to the heads of agreement that might exist or elsewhere. We would announce it together with the operator. So we've got a joint marketing team that involves the partners, involves Galp, ENH and COGAS. All of them are discussing with interested parties, and when we have something to announce, it has to go through that team.
So at this stage, you have no HOA signed?
I cannot say neither yes nor no.
Okay.
What we are doing is working with customers, potential customers, because there would not be FID without having a backup from customers and the good proposals from the EPC company. No? We will take in this material rational decisions as you would expect, Thomas. As far as Brazil and the ESA issue, what this company was doing is acquiring major pieces of equipment like compressors and then put them together in a package that will then be placed into the FPSO. It was what we call a module. No? So the long lead items, particularly compressors and some turbines, these are effectively long lead items, they are there. They are in Brazil. So what we are now doing is taking those long lead items and contracting to any international assembler, taking them, putting them together, and then transfer them to Brasfeld to place them in an FPSO. So it's what is module number 5, I think, which is the gas compression system, both for natural gas and CO2. So we cannot say whether what is the timing, because we will see that when the bids come into the table.
Okay.
But I repeat, the long lead items that need to be assembled are already in place. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas.
Hello?
Hello, yes?
Yeah, and the question on Keppel?
On capital?
Keppel, Brasfeld.
Yes, what happened, yes, I was not understanding your question.
Yeah, so
when it goes to existing past contracts, if any entity is catched or caught into this complex process, it does not affect past contracts. It only affects bidding going forwards. So in that way, it protects the existing ongoing operations, if they are sound.
Unless you're forced to cancel them.
Unless we cancel them because they are not delivering. No?
Okay.
But from the decisions taken by Petrobras is that any company that has been involved in corruption issues will not be contracted going forward. But the existing contracts, for the interest of everyone, including employees, will keep being executed,
okay,
provided they are able to do so.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We will now take our last question from Anish Kapadia of TPH. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. A couple of questions, please. Firstly, going back to Brazil, I just wanted to see your take on the impact of the entire board of Petrobras being replaced, given your key partner. Just wondering how that could potentially affect decision making with a completely new CEO, and I suppose the risk of a big change in the timelines as they reassess strategy. So just wondering kind of how much you've thought about that. And then secondly, on the Potiguar Basin, I just wanted to see, you talked about the discovery that you made over there potentially justifying a standalone FPSO, so it seems like a big material discovery, but really haven't heard much since then. So I just wanted to get a bit of an update on what your appraisal plans are and further exploration in the area. Thank you.
Anish, thank you for your two questions. No? You see, what is going on now, looking at is in Petrobras, the effect of all of that is affecting their governance practices. It's not affecting the operational activity in the company. I want you to note that the directors appointed, with exception from the CFO and the CEO, are Petrobras employees, like they used to be in the past. So we do not expect any change in neither attitude nor in major objectives. That is, on the other hand, they have in Brazil repeatedly telling us that the pre-salt projects are the first, and particularly BMS 11, are they have the highest priority in the capex of Petrobras. So we feel, from that point of view, relieved. No? The decision-making process, let me tell you, it is impossible not to affect the morale and the timing of some operations. But so far, we do not see the consequences of it. So the sooner the issues are clarified in Petrobras, the better for everybody. Let's hope that that happens. As far as the small, the discovery that we made is P2, I think you are referring to P2 in Cote d'Ivoire. Yes, we've got an appraisal well this year, a second contingent appraisal well for P2. Work is going on. It is a very good reservoir. It's a sandstone reservoir with very good characteristics and with volumes that justify, with the data that we have, that justify its development. But we still have to complete the appraisal campaign that is ongoing. And we will touch that in our capital markets day with the detail. Thank you, Anish, for your two questions.
Thanks very much.
I understand that there are no other questions that want to be addressed to us, and we want to thank you for those that are still online. Thank you for your patience with us and for giving us your time. But before I end today's call, I want to reaffirm our commitment to managing our integrated business as efficiently as we can in order to better support the development of our upstream projects. All the corporation that I lead is focused on this objective, that the gas and power and the refining and marketing business are supporting with the cash they generated the E&P business to take it to a level represents a transformation of the company. We will proceed, however, with strong financial discipline in order to maintain the solid capital structure that Philippe consistently refers to. I would also like to take this opportunity, my fellow colleagues, to invite you to our 12:15 Capital Markets Day that will take place in London on the 10th of March. As you know, we make this a big day. We will provide you a detailed update, and we will interact with each and all of you, discussing our main projects, as well as an update of our financial outlook for the coming years. I can say that I do not speak only for myself. I speak on behalf of the entire Galp Energia management team that will be there, and I say that all of us hope to see you there. Thank you for your time and attention. Bye-bye.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.